Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're tackling a really pivotal Rhode Island Supreme Court case, State v. Beely from 1995.
Yeah, this one's important.
It really is. It clarified the legal definition of breaking and entering there in Rhode Island, and maybe more importantly, kind of reshape how the whole defense of others thing works.
Definitely. Big changes.
We've got some good sources lined up, some specific podcast guidance on Beely, a really detailed case brief, and a more standard one, too.
Right. Plenty to dig into.
So our goal really is to pull all that together, figure out the key takeaways, and understand exactly how this ruling shifted things in Rhode Island regarding, you know, going onto someone's property and jumping in to help someone else.
And why it actually matters, right? These aren't just like abstract ideas.
Exactly. Why these nuances have a real world impact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, Beely really gets to the heart of balancing property rights against, well, our basic instinct to help someone who looks like they're in trouble. It's fascinating seeing the court try to thread that needle.
Okay, so let's set the scene. What actually happened? What are the core facts we need to know?
All right, so you've got James Beely and his friend, John Perry. It's late at night. Beely's just finished work. They head over to Perry's apartment.
Okay.
When they get inside, Perry finds his wife, Julie, with another man, Robert Harding.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Exactly. So things escalate fast. A fight breaks out. Perry, Julie, Harding are all involved. Now, here's the really critical part for the first charge. Beely enters the apartment, but the door, it's already wide open.
Completely open, not just unlocked or ajar.
Wide open. That's key. So Beely goes in, he punches Harding once, and then pulls Perry out of the apartment. That's the gist of it.
Wow. Okay. Pretty intense situation. So legally, what happened to Beely after that?
Well, he got charged with two things, breaking and entering and simple assault.
Right.
And at the trial court, the Superior Court, he was actually convicted on both counts.
Both, even with the open door.
Even with the open door. So naturally, he filed motions, you know, asking the judge to basically throw out the verdict or give him a new trial.
But those were denied.
Both denied. And that's what pushed the case up to the Rhode Island Supreme Court.
Gotcha. Okay, let's tackle that breaking and entering charge first. Like you said, the open door seems problematic for that charge. What was the specific legal question there?
Exactly. The core issue was, does walking through an already open door count as breaking under Rhode Island law? This really gets into statutory interpretation. What did the lawmakers mean by breaking?
Right. It can't just mean any entry without permission, can it? Especially if you don't, like, force your way in.
You hit the nail on the head. Rhode Island law, and the Supreme Court confirmed this in Beely, requires some kind of forceful entry. It doesn't have to be, you know, kicking the door down. Even just pushing open a closed but unlatched door, or one that's slightly ajar, counts as enough force.
Minimal force is still force.
Exactly. But the crucial fact here, again, was that the door was fully open. Beely didn't apply any force whatsoever to get inside.
So, seems pretty clear-cut then. What did the Supreme Court say?
They agreed. They reversed Beely's conviction for breaking and entering. Simple as that. Their reasoning was direct. No force used, no breaking, according to the statute.
So, the trial court messed up by even letting the jury decide on that charge.
Precisely. The Supreme Court said it was error to let that charge go to the jury, because the evidence just didn't support it legally. It's a great example of how legal terms like breaking have very specific meanings, you know, that might differ from how we use them casually.
Okay, that makes total sense. No force, no breaking. Done.
Now, the second charge, the simple assault. This is where Beely claimed he was defending Perry.
Yes, exactly. That was his whole defense for punching Harding. He argued he was defending his friend.
So what was the legal fight about there? The big question was, how do we judge Beely's actions? Should we look at whether Beely reasonably believed Perry was in danger? Or should we use something called the alter ego rule?
Alter ego rule. Sounds like Beely steps into Perry's shoes, legally speaking.
That's basically it. The alter ego rule means Beely's right to defend Perry is only as good as Perry's own right to self-defense at that exact moment.
And the trial court used that rule.
It did. The judge told the jury to apply the alter ego rule.
Whoa.
So even if Beely honestly thought Perry was getting unlawfully attacked, if it turned out later that Perry maybe started the fight or wasn't legally allowed to use self-defense himself,
then Beely's defense fails too.
Correct. Under that rule, Beely's intervention would also be unlawful. He inherits Perry's legal standing, basically.
Hmm. That seems pretty restrictive, especially in a chaotic situation. Did the Supreme Court stick with that?
Nope. They explicitly rejected the alter ego rule.
Mm.
They basically said it was outdated and didn't really work well for these kinds of situations.
Okay, interesting. So if they threw that out, what did they replace it with? What's the new standard?
The new standard focuses on the intervener, on Beely, in this case. The question becomes, did Beely have a reasonable belief that Perry was facing an unlawful attack?
So it's about Beely's perspective, reasonably assessed.
Exactly. Even if, hypothetically, Perry wasn't technically justified in defending himself, maybe he threw the first punch, which was actually disputed here. If Beely reasonably perceived Perry to be the victim of an unlawful attack, his intervention could still be justified.
That's a pretty significant shift.
It really is. The Supreme Court said the trial court's instructions using the old rule were wrong and probably confused the jury about what they were supposed to be deciding.
Why make that change, though? What was the court's thinking behind ditching the alter ego rule?
It really came down to public policy. The court was worried the alter ego rule could actually stop people from helping someone who looks like they're in serious trouble.
Because they'd be afraid of getting it wrong legally.
Precisely. Imagine you see a fight. It's happening fast. It's confusing. If your right to step in depends on you correctly figuring out all the legal nuances, who started it, who has the right to self-defense on the spot.
Yeah, you might just hesitate or do nothing.
Right. And the court felt that society actually benefits when people do step in to help apparent victims. Mm-hmm. They basically wanted to encourage good Samaritans, not punish them for making a reasonable, even if mistaken, judgment call in a crisis.
So it's about promoting intervention when it seems necessary.
Yeah, Justice Murray's quote in the opinion really captures it. Something like, the justification should be based on what a reasonable person might consider imminent harm. It emphasizes that reasonableness of the belief, even if mistaken, is key.
Okay, so boiling it down, what's the core principle now in Rhode Island for defending others post-Beely?
The principle is that your actions defending someone else are justified if you reasonably believe that person was facing an unlawful attack. It's about your subjective but reasonable belief, not about strict liability based on the other person's actual legal rights at that moment.
So subjective reasonableness trumps the alter ego rule.
You got it. And again, tying back to the first point, the case also hammered home the need for precise statutory interpretation. Breaking means breaking, requires force.
Got it. So after all this, what was the final verdict for Beely himself? What happened with his convictions?
Okay, so the breaking and entering conviction. Reversed, wiped out. The court said there just wasn't evidence of forceful entry.
Right.
The simple assault conviction, though, that was vacated, set aside, and remanded, meaning it was sent back to the lower court for a potential new trial.
But with different instructions this time.
Exactly. If there's a new trial, the jury would have to be told the new standard for defense of others, the one based on Beely's reasonable belief, not the old alter ego rule.
Makes sense. And why do we still talk about State v. Beely today? What's its lasting legacy in Rhode Island law?
It's really a cornerstone case for two big reasons. One, it locked down the definition of breaking. You need force. That's settled. Two, and arguably the bigger impact, it established the modern standard for defense of others, shifting focus to the intervener's reasonable belief.
Moving away from that rigid old rule.
Right. It shows how the common law can evolve, how courts adapt legal doctrines to better reflect, you know, societal values in this case, valuing the impulse to help someone in apparent danger.
So, summarizing the big takeaways for everyone listening. First, words and laws have very specific legal meanings. Breaking needs force, not just entry. Second, legal rules aren't static. They can change based on policy, like encouraging people to act reasonably to help others.
Perfectly put. And, you know, stepping back, Beely is just a fantastic illustration of what appellate courts do. They interpret statutes, yes, but they also shape the common law based on real-world considerations and changing ideas about justice.
Which leaves us with a final thought, maybe something for you, the listener, to mull over. This emphasis on reasonable belief rather than strict rules, or depending on someone else's legal status. How might that idea play out in other areas of law? Think about other situations involving intervention or defense. Does focusing on the actor's reasonable perspective ultimately create a more just system, or does it maybe introduce new kinds of complexity? Definitely something worth considering. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.